It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Just like that, the second hour is here. Hot Mike with Huddy Withrow here at outkick.com/watch is where you can stream the show live each and every day. Podcast galore wherever you download your audio, plus post-show.
Spotify.
Oh, there you go.
Apple.
And everywhere else.
Everywhere else. I promise tomorrow, Hutton, when I come in, I'm going to find one other platform. Okay. Where you can find us.
Yeah, okay.
Those are the two I know.
Well, but you can find us everywhere.
You know, they told me way back, I didn't even go to broadcasting school, but early on in broadcasting, talk about what you know.
Okay.
Okay. Yep. I know Apple. I know Spotify. I know nothing else. I'll figure those out tomorrow.
Chad is dead serious. No broadcasting school. However, Ned Michaels, our guest now, did sit in for one of our broadcasts.
Yeah.
And apparently took notes that no longer exist. At least I hope for your sake, Ned, that's the case.
My guess was he tossed them immediately.
Immediately.
I think he was taking notes just to humor us at the time.
Ned, good to see you, man.
That was, what, a year or two ago?
Yeah,
roughly.
That was like 2022,
roughly.
I think, right? That seems right.
Something like that.
Hey, man, it's always great to catch up with you. Plenty to discuss off of the weekend. I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great. I am. Thank you for asking. And thank you all for letting me sit in with you those years ago, because it has led, whether you know it or not, to me being able to now call the Masters for nearly my 10th year.
I often tell people we are responsible for all your success in broadcasting. When we hear you on the Masters coverage, I say, you know, if it wasn't for us, I don't know where Ned would be. I certainly wouldn't be calling the Masters right now. So I guess congrats to us as well as to you.
Talking this beautiful game of golf, Ned.
Yeah.
The beautiful round yesterday by Scottie Scheffler, just the overall dominance that we've seen, even though we had four players knotted at six under, maybe, as we made the turn yesterday. Did it feel to you the same it did for Chad and I? It just kind of felt like it was Scheffler's day, even though we saw four players tied headed to the second nine.
Yes, it felt that way, didn't it? It felt like even though he didn't have the lead, it was his to lose. And, you know, Tiger used to have that, right? Tiger had, and Nicholas had that, where everybody just kind of fell away. And he knew that if he played solid, the pressure would get to everybody else. And Scottie Scheffler basically did the same thing after he made the double bogey and the bogey as he made the turn yesterday at 10 and 11, the 10th and 11th holes on Saturday, rather, and responded with that eagle. It was kind of, okay, now it's Scottie's. There was just, for him, it was always right there. And for everybody else, it was way out there. Even Colin Morikawa, who has two major championships, you just had the sense that it was Scottie's to take, and he did.
Yeah, and it's a testament to Scottie Scheffler and his greatness right now. No doubt about it, Ned. Is it too much to ask for Max Homa, let's say, to rise up and not fall away? Because that's been his MO at the majors. He was in position to give himself a run yesterday in Augusta, and that didn't happen for him.
No, it is not. I read his coach, Mark Blackburn, is an old friend of mine who played on the mini tours together. So I always get some good information from Mark. And he posted on Twitter today about how you unlock the code, how you crack the code of winning a major championship. And he said that he and Max's team feel like we've now cracked the code. We know how to do it. We know how Max's body is going to respond. We know exactly what we need to do going into the majors, going into the final round. So is it a stretch to see Homa win a major? No, I don't think so at all.
Then Michaels, our guest, Tiger Woods simply wants to compete. And he's seven shots off the lead going into the weekend. So he's doing that. He makes another cut at Augusta National. Ned, is it overreaction to see the headlines we're seeing about we're not going to see him win at a high level ever again? I'm appreciating the fact that he's out there because the greatest players of all time, I'm not sure how many would go through the process that he's going through. But to see him, 16 over par for the tournament, which is his worst in a major, 82 is what he shot on Saturday. How great is it to see him, but at the same time know that it's so bad that CBS doesn't even want to mention his score?
You know, about the score, first of all, hard golf course. Second of all, he was laboring.
Yeah.
I'm sure you saw the clip of him putting all the ointment on his hip and on his back before he teed off, and he's got a huge patch, one of those heat patches on his back. You know, he was in a lot of pain. And the fact that he made the cut, I can't even tell you how ridiculously impressive that is. Do I think that he can win again? I actually do think that he can win again. Augusta National is one of the hardest walks in professional golf. It's hilly. You never have a flat lie, so your feet are always trying to find comfort under you.
Yeah,
which of course gets to your knees.
And TV does not do it justice, Ned.
Yeah, it does not.
Not even close. Yeah, it's one of the toughest walks in golf on the professional tour. So I actually think he could win at a place like, say, Troon, British Open, where it's flat and the walk is a little bit easier. He needs warm temperatures, but, you know, I do. I think his game was there. I mean, I watched him on the range on Wednesday, absolutely pepper every flag that he was aiming at. And it's just a matter of, can he walk? You know, for example, if he would take a cart, he never will, maybe until he gets the Champs Tour. If he could take a cart and not have to walk, I think he could win tomorrow. It's the walk that gets him.
We all got to know Ludvig Åberg a little bit better yesterday, Ned. Is he the real deal?
He is more than the real deal. I mean, this guy is a machine. He plays fast, which I love. He's decisive. When he gets the club in his hand, he goes. And his driver, with the exception of McIlroy, he might be the best driver of the golf ball on the planet, or at least on the PGA Tour. So to answer your question in short, he is absolutely the real deal.
How many times has he changed the pronunciation of his last name? I was told upwards of four times.
I can think of four different variations.
Okay, say them if you can.
Okay, I'll try it. So there was Ludvig Åberg. Mm-hmm. Then there was Ludvig Åberg. And then there was Ludvig Åberg.
We're getting close. And then Åberg.
Now we've settled on Ludvig Åberg.
And maybe one time it was Ludvig instead of Ludvig.
I don't know the Swedish language, but how is an Ludvig. A with the little thing over it? O. You know, I mean, like the pronunciation sounds like O, but it's the A with whatever that mark is on top of it.
It's a lot like the NHL players that teams will try to Americanize the pronunciation of their name.
And they don't care.
They don't care until it goes international and everyone's bitching them out for it.
Yeah, all the Swedes are mad at him.
Yeah.
As an American broadcaster, you cannot try to say international players' names the way that they are said in their homeland.
You're right.
You sound like you are just a complete phony. But you're right. At one point, it was Ludvig, and then it went to Ludvig. But I will tell you one on our research computers.
Yes.
When you type in the letter A, when you're looking for his stats, for the longest time, it didn't come up. And it was so frustrating because you're trying to find all of his stats, but because you can't put the little symbol in the.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have to dig down deep. So now they fixed it, though.
Did you have any interaction with Vern Lundquist this week?
I did, actually. I just got back to Nashville. I took the early flight out of Augusta and sat next to Uncle Vern.
Oh, wow.
Matter of fact. And actually had a really wonderful conversation with him. Picked his brain about who were his mentors. How did he study and who did he study as he was becoming the Vern Lundquist that we know? We also compared some notes on remote broadcasting, which is, as you all know, becoming more and more prevalent in the world of broadcasting and sports. And then being in the tower or being on the field and just how very different disciplines they are. So I had a really wonderful conversation with him today on the plane. And then this week at the retirement party for he and Sean McManus from CBS Sports had the opportunity to talk with him a little bit and break some bread. He He's a legend. He's a legend as a man. He's a legend as a broadcaster. And you don't earn the nickname Uncle anything, Uncle Vern, unless you're just a good human. He's going to be sorely missed.
Does he live in Nashville?
No, we were flying from Augusta to Atlanta, okay. And he was going to New York for Sean McManus's retirement party, and I was coming home.
What was the most interesting takeaway from your conversation about Tower versus different broadcast spots on a golf course?
Yeah, it's just being in the environment, right? You can feel when the wind changes if you're in the booth, not on the golf course, right? If you're in the truck, for example, you can't feel that, and you can't feel the nervous energy of the patrons, and you see it on the players' faces. He would talk about just the little bitty nuances that you pick up by being, you know, right there on the 16th hole.
Ned Michaels, our guest. Anything just weird or fishy about the fact that Bryson DeChambeau's irons were approved 3 days before this tournament? What do you know about these clubs, Ned?
Yeah, so this is super interesting. From what I know about the clubs, and I'll try to keep this as simple as possible, yeah. But on a three-wood, for example, the face actually has some curvature to it. So if you hit it off the toe, it kind of comes back to the center of the fairway. You hit it off the heel, you know, if you're a right-handed player, it kind of slices left to right, but back to the center of the fairway. But irons have always been straight-faced, you know, somewhat of a linear relationship. And he put curvature, it's bulge and roll, it's called, into his irons. And so his miss hits going straighter. If these things, they cost $10,000 basically to produce this set via 3D printing. But if he's able to mass produce them, in theory, what his theory is makes a lot of sense. So I'm actually interested to, next time I see him, I don't know when that'll be, by the way, but next time I see him, I'll be interested to see what those irons look like and see if I might be able to hit them a couple of times, because it really could help everybody's game.
Do you see an issue with competitive edge with the LIV guys when they come over and play in majors versus the way their competition is right now in the LIV Tour versus PGA Tour?
You know, interesting question. I'm at the golf sanctuary with my son, who I just picked up from school, and one of his buddies, and we were talking about that exact question. You know, there were a handful of LIV players who performed beautifully, and what you kind of would expect is in the fourth round they might fade. They didn't, for the most part. Tyrrell Hatton and Cam Smith was right there. Obviously, DeChambeau didn't play great, but he still had a nice finish. So I think that argument, and I used to believe heavily in that argument, that wearing shorts, playing three rounds in this festive party atmosphere that LIV has created is going to be a detriment to your game. You're just not going to be as sharp. And I'm beginning to soften on that stance a little bit.
Have you been to one of their events at all?
I haven't, but there's one coming to Nashville.
Yeah, we're considering going. Maybe we'll see you there. Maybe we don't have to take your private jet to get there, Ned. So maybe we can borrow Vern as well, since he doesn't have much going on.
How's the merger coming along between LIV and PGA? Do you know anything about that after it was announced? It's been very quiet.
Yeah, I thought it'd be done by now, I got to be honest. So that makes me a little anxious, a little nervous. I don't have any inside information on how close they are. As a matter of fact, if anybody tells you they do have inside information, they're probably telling you a fib, because this thing is as tight-lipped and under lock and key as I've really ever seen in the world of golf or any sporting endeavor when it comes to one of these leagues. They've done a really wonderful job, I think, of keeping it all in-house, both the tour and the negotiations with the PIF and with LIV. I think it's going to get done. I think the players want it to get done. I think the fans want it to get done. I just think you have to be really careful, because as my dad always said, it's easy to get into things and it's hard to get out. So you better make sure that the structure and the format is spot on when they get this thing done.
Ned, I want to tie in Scheffler and Tiger with the, I've seen the video. It's been out for a while, where they're on the range together, and Scheffler's asking Tiger do you normally don't take divots on the range, and there's no divot there when he's just practicing. Is there another player that you can point to that does that on the routine, no divot?
There's some guys who are a little shallower impact, like Steve Stricker. he didn't take very big divots. He was kind of a sweeper. And I'll tell you who, Tom Watson. Okay. Tom Watson grew up in Kansas City on zoysia grass. And so you don't want to hit down as much on the zoysia grass because the ball kind of sits up. You want to sweep it. So Tom Watson would be a guy. But, you know, I sat there again and watched Tiger on Wednesday, and he hit two of the sacks of balls that they have at the tournament practice area. And there might have been four or five little divots. I mean, he was flushing it, but there weren't. I was watching, and I had my binoculars out, and I'm looking, and there just weren't many divots. So he's telling the truth.
How was your broadcast?
It was wonderful. I have such a it's just a gift to be able to do 15 and 16, and I'm sure I've told this story before, but when I was a kid growing up, my dad and I would go down to the Masters. He would take me, and our routine was we'd go to the tournament practice area. We'd watch our favorite players. He was a Arnold Palmer and Tom Watson guy, so I heard about all of their triumphs. And then we'd ease our way back down to, not to Amen Corner, but to 15 and 16.
Yeah.
And you would stay there all day long. That was our spot. We'd get chicken sandwiches. I'd get a lemonade. Dad might have a cold beer. And we would stay until the last player went through 15 and 16. And when CBS said, hey, we got a seat for you. We're going to have you on the broadcast. I asked them, well, where are you going to put me? And they said, we're going to put you on 15 and 16.
And you knew so, it well. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Is there when you're done with your broadcast, if you're just observing, is there something each year, Ned, that you're now doing as maybe a ritual or the routine? Maybe it's superstition. I don't know. Specifically at Augusta National.
Ooh, I got to tread lightly here because yes, okay. After every broadcast, yes, there are. It's something, so you got your work to do. You've got to study. You've got to read, because when you're on 15 and 16, you're doing these two holes. It's hard to keep track of what's going on the course and who's doing what and how did he make a double and where did he make his birdie or eagle. So you have to go watch some of the highlights. So, you know, you kind of get your computer out. You might pour yourself a cold beer and you watch Golf Central to get caught up on everything. But my new favorite tradition, and hopefully it continues to be a tradition, after the Sunday broadcast, when we get done, my broadcast partner, Scottish gal, Iona Stephen, who I just absolutely adore, and we have just wonderful chemistry together, she and I scurry up the hill to the clubhouse, and we watch the final pairing come in from the clubhouse on the balcony as the sun is setting. And then we watch the green jacket presentation together. So that's
legit,
that's
man.
As good as it gets.
That's awesome. I thought maybe you went to Berkman's place.
No comment.
Okay. But he says he has to tread lightly. I'm immediately assuming that. Ned, never have to assume that it's going to be a great visit with you. It always is. Really appreciate it. And let's keep in touch. We'll see you at the Live Tour.
Maybe so.
Thanks, Dad.
As you know, thanks for letting me talk about this great game of golf, fellas. Always enjoy it.
Let us come shadow you sometime. We'll take notes and then immediately trash them the way you did with our show back in the day.
We may have to keep them now.
Yeah.
Version of
next
that.
Time you're on 15 and 16, we'll be there and be your note takers the entire time. Any day of the week, Dad.
I need some of that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ned.
All right, guys. Continued success to you.
Same to you.
Same
man.
To you.
There's Ned Michaels, PJ Tour broadcaster. And if you haven't seen the featured pairings and the whole coverage of what the Masters does, he is excellent with the analysis.
Yeah, Ned's always been great and excellent explainer of the game. That's the way I would describe Ned. He's always been good at telling people that may not be the most avid golfers even golf fans, explaining the game, which is a gift.
How about $10,000 for your irons?
It's a lot of money. You know what Saudi money can get you?
$10,000 That's just irons. You're right. That's a meal.
It's not a lot. I've been the whole time. I'm like, it's really nothing much for him.
That's right. Hey, while we're talking Masters, no one's really talking NBA. Postseason is here, believe it or not. We have that, plus WNBA. Doesn't want OutKick talking about,
anything.
WNBA, period.
Because they won't give them a credential.
The very
By
latest,
them, I mean OutKick, I mean us.
Yeah, based on what Clay has told us. That's next here on Hot Mic.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's Outkick's Hot Mic with Hunt and Withrow. Chad, one of the, well, many things that we would discuss this time of year of, you know, I don't know, the last 5-6 years would have been spring games. And really going back before that, but it was just the time of the spring post NCAA tournament. That's not the case anymore.
And no.
Brian Kelly, even at LSU, is to the point where he doesn't really even care based on what he's just recently quoted. What do you say?
Our buddy SEC Mike tweeted this out. It's just a little clip of him post LSU spring game in his press conference. And Mike said, Brian Kelly masterfully sums up spring game recaps. And he opened his press conference by just saying, so what do you guys want to know? It was a spring game. And then he kind of giggled and started taking questions. That pretty much sums it up. And I kind of like how there's no facade about it anymore.
Yeah.
Like even the coaches are kind of in
it's
on the joke.
It's not even a game anymore.
Yeah. It's like, hey, we'll put up some highlights of some deep passes and different things.
Yeah.
But anyone who's remotely banged up is not going to play. Our starting quarterback's going to throw the ball about 10 times. And we're going to get him out of the game. And there's not a lot to it. And that's fine. That's really fine. College football in general, because of the era we're in with open transfer portal and everything else, I find it harder and harder to really analyze your own team's roster until you get to summer camp. Even post-spring, there's going to be another transfer portal where people are going to leave because they're not getting the opportunities they want. So why invest until you get to the summer and you know what your team looks like? And I don't even look at the class of the player and what year they're in, because I don't know how long they're going to be around, because anyone can transfer right after.
And that's the case with college hoops right now, too. We're seeing that. Some big names entering the portal.
Yeah. Tyrese Hunter, the point guard at Texas. Dylan Mitchell. At Texas also recently entered the portal. Tennessee just landed Darlington Dubar from Hofstra, who averaged 18 points a game for them, a 6'8" player. So the portal is popping.
And if you're looking at Hofstra,
it's always popping.
Hofstra gave Alabama good talent. And now there's
Aaron Estrada, second leading scorer was from Hofstra.
And there's a good player from Bama who just entered the portal. Did you say that?
Sam Walter, played a lot, 6'10" lefty shooter. He's entered the portal at Alabama.
Chad,
the portal is constantly spinning.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. We're not talking much about talking more portal than we are spring game, as you mentioned. We're not going to be talking about the WNBA draft all that much because the WNBA, Clay Travis tweeted this, after Outkick asked Dawn Staley whether men should be able to play women's basketball, the WNBA has refused to credential Outkick for their draft this week. Circling the wagons to make sure men could compete in women's athletics without criticism is legit incredible, but it's where we are. This is unbelievable to me, pulling credential access for the WNBA draft because of Dan Z and his question to Dawn Staley at the Final Four, which Staley chose to answer, albeit in her own way, but didn't just point to, well, I'm just focused on the game. I'm focused on the Final Four. She actually answered it, meaning that there are people who are willing to answer the question and don't need to be treated as if, you have to make sure from a PR standpoint that you're controlling the headlines and not allowing a coach to be asked anything, a player to be asked anything, a representative of your league to be asked anything regarding a very important issue and one that just still stuns us.
Yeah, it's complete horseshit. Is what it is, quite frankly. And I'm not going to hold back on this because it is not a league's place to withhold access because you don't like a question, especially because you don't like a question asked to somebody in college when you're the professional league and you're the WNBA. We're going to be so precious about our women's basketball celebrities as the WNBA that because Dawn Staley was asked a question that she wasn't even offended by and answered the day before she played in a national championship game, that to protect her, you're going to withhold access to Outkick? It's loser mentality. is what it is. And I want someone else to hold their feet to the fire on this. Let's have some other media outlets pitch in here. Let's have Fox pitch in on this. Fox News, Fox Sports. It's bullshit. Someone else should say it too, outside of OutKick. Someone else have OutKick's back on this, because it's your access that's gone next. Just think about that for a second. If media doesn't pitch in and say, hey, that was a pretty thoughtful question that got an interesting response, and now they're going to withhold access to an event that I'm going to guess isn't going to be the most widely covered sporting event of the next few weeks, the WNBA draft. I know that that interest is up with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese in the draft, but give me a break. And someone else should cover it other than just awful announcing writing about it, and people should be outraged about it.
Yeah, and no one was really covering the Dan Zee and Don Staley answer there. Plus,
and it's bullshit.
The WNBA is pointing to the fact that the deadline for credentials was missed by less than 24 hours, by the way.
Yeah.
3,000-person venue, and we're talking about sending one writer there.
Yeah. Now, I too would like to complain more about access that Hutton and I aren't granted at times when we apply for things right here in this town.
Yeah.
But I'm told to refrain from that because, well, they're only doing this for so many outlets and this and that. I would like to be outraged also, but I have self-control and I don't show the outrage that I would love to about certain places like the SEC.
Right, but their credentials were granted in that case, at least some.
Yeah, they need to grant more.
Oh, they do. They
I mean,
do,
but I'm sorry. I've seen these events, and there's not too many media.
But in
there.
This case, there's not one credential granted.
I'd like to tell places like the SEC or other conferences, maybe not give 24 credentials out to the hometown media covering the big basketball school in your conference, and a lot for, I don't know, three or four more to the national outlet that's right there in the city where you're having your event. That would be good business. And a good way to do business with partners that have covered you and done a lot for you over the years. That's just the way I would approach it. And I would say the same for the WNBA. Whatever's going to be asked by an OutKick reporter at the WNBA draft is probably going to be more widely viewed and read than 95% of the coverage of this draft. So stop withholding access because you don't like a question to a college basketball coach.
Well, think about it.
Loser behavior.
But just even comparing SEC, which is also just BS, to the WNBA here. We had Glenn Gilbo in the locker room with Brandon Miller with all that saga going on during the SEC tournament a year and a half ago. And, you know, credentials weren't pulled a year later. You know what I mean? In this case, it's a question to a championship-winning coach, the unbeaten South Carolina women's basketball program. And Dawn Staley actually pausing to think about how she would answer said question. And now the WNBA noticing this. And also, by the way, Clay didn't mention this, but Clay's also put the $1 million offer out there.
Yeah.
For the high school men's team to compete against the women's team.
It's also what Glenn Gilbo asked to Brandon Miller. Legitimate question, and one that's going to upset all the Alabama people and whatever, don't care.
Right.
What Dan Zee asked, Don Staley, legitimate question, got a legitimate answer, going to piss off all of women's basketball apparently, don't care. It should not stop the institution from granting media access for that. Now, on the flip side, if Barstool is going to go and stage an impromptu protest in the lobby of NFL headquarters over a Tom Brady suspension, then yeah, I can kind of see where the NFL might come back and say, we're going to limit your access to certain events, right?
Yeah.
Now,
they're still showing
it's a little
up.
Crazy when they're also trying to kick them out of buying a ticket to events and going that far with it. But there's different levels of this. If I saw OutKick showing up and staging a huge elaborate protest and disrupting the draft with people that were granted access, and then they came back and said, all right, now you no longer get a credential. Okay, you know, fair is fair at that point. But because a legitimate question was asked and answered by Dawn Staley, and credit to her, even though I don't agree with her, she gave an answer, she thought about it, and she answered it and didn't get overly upset. Now OutKick doesn't have access to WNBA events. Whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, this is par for the course on trying to not have comment or conversation about the transgender in women's sports issue. It's not about whether or not you denounce the decision. This is about just competition.
Yeah, where
and the WNBA, you have a man drafted in the league. You think that's not going to be covered years from now?
Yeah, I'd like to throw out, I know OutKick's going to cover this and cover our part of the story on this
again.
And talk about it. Where are the protect journalists with a capital J people on this? Because it's very easy when Donald Trump is talking about fake news for all the media to band together and say, we better start producing documentaries about the good work journalists do, and we better protect journalism, and Meryl Streep can take to the stage and receive an award for acting and talk about protecting journalism, and we got to look out for our journalists all over the place. And when journalists are asking journalistic questions that get a response about an issue, then those journalists are denied access to future events. Step up. Even if you disagree with the platform, step up. It's all the same. Do you want access or not? Even if you agree or disagree with the questions being asked, that's journalism. That's reporting. It's asking tough questions, whether you agree with it or disagree with it. So join the fight. If you're going to fight on that, fight on this too. That's my message to everyone.
David, do we know, is it Dan Z we're going to send? Do we know? Is it WBA draft? Is that probably? Was that the plan?
They were trying to get Dan Z and potentially Charlie, I believe.
Okay, yeah, because it takes place in New York, which I had to look up. I didn't know where they were doing the draft, where Caitlin Clark will be drafted number one overall.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Are they going to try to silence Angel Reese whenever she agrees or disagrees with something, or Caitlin Clark for that matter, when she agrees or disagrees with a question asked to her? Absolutely not.
Well, and it lowers my opinion of the whole industry when others don't get outraged about this.
Right.
Because we can scream into a microphone all we want, but it's about our company. So people might care. This might get clipped. It might get shown on YouTube. It might get shown on X. And then people that follow OutKick are going to click like and say, yeah, I agree with that. I'd love for others to pick up the baton here and talk about it also, because it is important, because you're next. And just because you're next isn't on the same wavelength of whatever OutKick's talking about or writing about, it doesn't matter when it's flipped on its head and then a league doesn't like whatever question you're asking.
Right.
And then you're going to want others to join in and cover it also because you're being denied access. That's my solemn plea to media everywhere.
Yeah, man, you have awful announcing that's picked it up. You know, that's mentioning what Clay has put out there on Twitter. But again, no credentialed access. As Clay says, based on the question that Dan Z, a fair one, asked Don Staley at the Final Four recently.
I'm reading the awful announcing story right now, and it says, Travis seemingly implied that the credentials were denied after his outlet had asked whether men should be able to play women's basketball in the lead up to the women's Final Four and national championship game. And I'm reading Clay's tweet, and it's not seemingly, that's what he said.
Well, that's what he said, but then they go on to say that the deadline had passed. That's what the WNBA have said.
Yeah.
Again, whatever. Within hours. You know. I don't know when the deadline was.
With or without OutKick in attendance, all eyes in Brooklyn across the nation will be on Iowa's Caitlin Clark as the Indiana Fever.
Let's go ahead and put in a credential request
the top
for
spot at Monday's
the
WNBA
Fever.
Draft.
We don't miss that deadline.
I mean, Dan Dockich is right down the road. He needs to cover Caitlin Clark's debut.
Well, I mean, hopefully we'll still send people outside of the Brooklyn Academy of Arts or whatever it's called, where they're doing
the metropolitan, the metro areas.
No, wherever they're doing the draft.
Do you think that Caitlin Clark is going to have 22,000 people show up like Mark Pope did for his press conference for the Indiana Fever? She might. She might be able to pull it off.
I'm sure. I mean, she'll have more than 22,000 watching.
If you had a free event for Caitlin Clark introductory pep
Presser.
Rally in Indiana?
Absolutely they will.
I bet they could, whatever the field house is called now there.
What do you think the attention will be for Rick Pitino returning to Lexington to face off against Mark Pope? They've agreed to a home-and-home. Kentucky
they have.
And St. John's.
Pretty quickly, Rick Pitino puts out that video saying why you should back Mark Pope. And they get on the phone, get on the horn.
Athletes.
And they set up a home-and-home. We'll continue doing our bad Rick Pitino impressions. They set up the home, Pausini. they get the home and home done. St. John's going to Lexington this upcoming season. Kentucky returning the favor at Madison Square Garden the following season.
Yeah, the NBA playoffs, the play-in tournament's underway. It's going to be.
Is it?
It's about to be, yeah.
Tonight?
Yeah, I believe they play tonight.
You mean I got NBA playoff hoops?
Okay. Yeah, they announced it yesterday.
NBA playoff hoops in full swing.
You do, but you're not going to have the stars. Like, Giannis is apparently missing the first round. You have the ratings, which are low anyway right now for the NBA. Of course, they've got their rights deal that they're negotiating, which will expire at the end of next season. Here's the NBA and Adam Silver trying to capitalize on their biggest momentum of their year, because that's when we actually start paying attention to the play, and really not even for a couple of rounds into the playoffs. It's going to be rough, especially whenever you have all the leads that have been given up in recent weeks, even by some of the best teams. And it's the back and forth blowouts that we've seen this year. Well, that's par for the course of the regular season, but it could be the par for the course in the postseason, at least early on.
I'm going to give it 5 minutes.
Lopsided.
I'm going to give it 5 minutes. I'm going to tune into one of these games. I'm going to give it 5 minutes, and if I'm compelled to watch more, I will.
They have two teams with losing records.
Portion, I will tune in when the actual tournament starts, but to the play-in portion, I'm going to give each game 5 minutes. And I'll report back, and I'll tell you what I watch. I may even take notes and tell you what I see over those 5 minutes. Things that jump out, good or bad to me.
Don't watch
the play-in.
The East. Don't watch the Eastern Conference. Giannis is out. You've got Joel Embiid, who's injured. And your top stars there are out.
Okay. I'm going to watch all of it.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to give a little bit of all of it, and I'll report back.
Chad, do you know the number one seeds?
The number one seeds in the – I know that the Oklahoma City Thunder are the number one seed in the West.
Yes.
I'm going to guess the Boston Celtics are the number one seed in the East.
We appreciate.
Yes.
The Boston Celtics. Coming up, got to discuss one of the cool moments that has been, I think, underplayed about the Mark Pope presser.
Mock Pope.
Mock.
Please.
That's next here on Hot Mic. Hot Mic with Hutton Withrow, outkick.com/watch is where you can stream the show live. Chad, Arkansas hired John Calipari, who doesn't really want to call the Hawks, even though he was, you know, learning how
kind of went
do
through
it.
The motions.
Yeah, he did, but then he didn't do it at the presser. Like, not the presser, the introductory.
They were teaching him in the backdrop,
and they said,
in the locker room.
Got to go talk to these coaches, right?
Yeah.
Smart move, by the way. I mean, I would feel awkward doing it, too. Meanwhile, Kentucky has hired Mark Pope. Of course, the Wildcats win a championship. Many of the players from the team on hand for his press conferences. He became the 23rd head coach for Kentucky's program. But he didn't want to pose for a photo with the Kentucky jersey that had 23 on it. Instead, he wanted his own jersey, 41. So he brought back it was the white jersey that they used, that he wore.
In the 96 national championship game.
Yes, in New York. And I believe it was New York or New Jersey, one of the two. Anyway, Prudential
Center.
I think
they played at East Rutherford, New Jersey.
Okay.
Yeah.
Prudential Center is what he said. Anyway, he brings out the 41. He says, this means something to me. This is something I'm not going to throw in a closet. He was wearing the blue Kentucky uniform with 41 under a suit while he was still the head coach at BYU.
It's impossible for me to describe how much I love this university, my teammates, and you fans, but I'm going to try.
C-A-T-S, Cats, Cats, Cats.
I love you guys.
Man, he's all in, and he's been all in, and rightfully so. I mean, you could tell the former players are. I love his line about you don't go back to your NBA team. You come back to your college. You come back to your college locker room.
Yeah.
It's a great point. And I love the sentiment that he has for number 41, the pointing to the rafters, all this. Didn't it feel like, though, and I think this has been underplayed or maybe not mentioned enough, this presser had a feel of Kentucky at the bottom trying to get back up.
Yeah.
Like Gillespie era. Instead of the Calipari era, which has been really good and not good enough. But it had a feel like it was a team that hadn't even been to the tournament recently. And while they haven't been winning recently in the tournament, they've still been having dominant seasons and getting to the tournament with high expectations. We had them in the Final Four, for instance. It felt the opposite. And it's, I guess, about how does he attack the portal? How can he keep certain players around? Can he be the shepherd of the shepherd, right? And how does it translate to the recruiting world we're in right now? When it just feels like many coaches think and believe they can make their own version of Kentucky where they are.
I think it's going to translate well. I don't think it takes a really good to great coach to get good players to Kentucky. It does take a good coach to elevate those players to where Kentucky's expectations lie.
Yeah.
Which is, as Mark Pope said, hanging banners is the goal at Kentucky all the time. It takes a good coach to do that, and I think he can do it. And, Hunt, to your point about it felt like a rock-bottom situation he was inheriting when that's not the case.
It would rally the troops.
With Kentucky. You know? It felt like Nebraska when they hired Scott Frost, yep. And then Nebraska again when they hired Matt Rhule. It felt like that type of press conference, right, or that yep. type of moment. I think about when Frost came back, having played in Nebraska, that was sort of what it felt like to me too. And you forget that, I mean, Kentucky was a 3 seed in the NCAA tournament this year.
I know.
2 years ago, they were 2 seed, and they lost in the first round. So this is not a team that has been bad, you know, in recent years. Calipari got really good players and really talented. And, oh, by the way, all those talented players are no longer going to Kentucky with their entire recruiting class really separating and going their own way. So I think year one's going to be fascinating to see how he assembles this roster and what type of team they have. But in the long run, they're going to recruit just fine with Mark Pope. And I think this pep rally press conference shows that.
I just don't know how it translates to today's player because of the portal. You know, because you 1 year and you can go somewhere else if you don't like the playing time or whatever promises you were granted. It's just a different vibe than it was in 96 and what he was getting across. I don't know if you can pull that off in the same mentality, mindset, passion that he did. He pulled it off well at the presser. Still a lot to be seen there. One thing he didn't do is hand out free chicken to the fans, the BBN.
He didn't have KFC. Not hands.
No,
Kentucky Fried. The handout to everyone.
Boban Marjanovic, though, he did have the opportunity. So the Clippers had something going. They were the home team. Where if a player misses 2 free throws in a row for the visiting team, there's free chicken for the crowd.
The fans have a voucher, or they can use their ticket at a chicken spot.
Chick-fil-A.
To get some Chick-fil-A. Free chicken.
I mean, I would be rooting for this too, right?
Couldn't get it yesterday when it happened.
So right.
On a Sunday, but today.
That's right.
Could load up on that Chick-fil-A.
So Boban, who you've seen in recent movies with Adam Sandler, commercials as well.
Yeah.
And you're like, who's that ugly guy? It's this dude.
Who's the giant?
He recognizes the moment. He just missed his first free throw. Houston is who he plays for. They're up 8 at the time. They go on to win against the Clippers. They already know their playoff fate at this point. And you can hear the crowd and watch the WWE-esque babyface, Boban, hand out free chicken.
Eventually, be some free chicken on the board if he misses his second free throw.
Oh, man, free chicken on the board.
Yeah, so that's why the fans are getting a little frothy.
Oh, they're pointing to anything. Boban's playing with the crowd. Say, you want chicken?
Here's your job.
No, he gave him chicken. He's a man of the people. He's a man of the people.
Think he did that on purpose?
He did. He gave out free chicken.
Gave out free chicken for missing
and he was really doing the old.
Oh, you know, he like was the, pumping he him was, up.
He was
the only thing
loud
better. The only thing better would be to play the heel and just drain the free throw after doing all those antics.
Yeah, you want chicken?
You want chicken?
You want chicken? Here you go.
Go pay for it.
Banks one in.
Draymond would have done that.
Yes.
Draymond sinks the free throw. We're back at it for the Tuesday edition, 4 p.m. Eastern.
I'm hungry for chicken.
Join us. Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow here at Outkick.com.
I'm going to go eat chicken.